Podcast, we are going to be talking about TV again, but this time we're talking about TV and whether or not it's actually making a comeback. We're discussing a report that Ofcom have released in the UK. Then we're going to be talking about whether or not cutting the cord is the end of traditional TV from a report from the US. We're going to talk about Intel and Toshiba's campaign and the power inside and what the hell is going on with that campaign. Lots of interesting discussions on that one. And finally, the Wallys that queue up for the Magnum pop-up store. Are they Wallys or am I a Wally for not queuing up and getting my rose petal Magnum? All of that on this week's PhD Panel. Hello, podcast listeners. It's your host for this week, Nicola Davey. Hi. And I've role-reversed with the lovely Chris Stevenson, who's on the other side of the desk and being a podcaster today. Hello, Chris.
Hello. How's it going? You well?
Very good, thank you. We've got podcast regular Stuart Gurney.
Bonjour, ça va?
And we've got a regular guest feature of Lauren Oldham on the podcast this week. Hi, Lauren.
Hello.
How are you all? Very well today.
Good, thank you.
Trevian, merci.
Oui, oui, d'accord. Okay, let's move on. So, up first this week, we're talking about an article on BBC News where UK's communications regulator Ofcom has reported that 91% of adults are watching their main TV set once again, which is up from 88% in 2002, but their attention is distracted. So essentially what they're talking about is that UK families are gathering around the box more and more, akin to what was happening in the 50s, but this time they're a lot more distracted. Tell me what's happening.
Well, it's interesting because I think we're just seeing, we've talked about this quite a lot on the podcast, as regular listeners, all of you, or four of you, will know that it's all about aggregating around really relevant content. So this is a trend, and we talked about last week around the kind of depth of involvement around TV programmes and binging, as the trend is called. And we're seeing this proliferation again, and that for me is part of that trend. Also, I think it's also relating to the fact that we are still, as human beings, we're quite social creatures, and there is that sense of belonging, and we do like to aggregate around certain things. And once again, the TV and TV content has become prominent enough for us to allow us to do that.
It's an interesting report. The headline is really misleading. The headline talks about how living room TV is making a comeback. I'm not quite sure you can say up 3% in 10 years from 88 to 91% is a comeback. If it is, I've made many comebacks in my life that I wasn't aware of. But it's kind of, I'm not sure it's about TV making a comeback. The real story, really, I think, from this report is that of the increasing penetration of other devices in the living room, whether it's tablets or smartphones. We know they're increasing in terms of their adoption, but seeing those now being multi-screened and multitasked in the living room is what's happening. I think that you could easily see contradiction in this between broadcast holding its own and the rise of other screen media. There's no contradiction. Both are happening. I think that the potential loser on this is actually the broadcast interruption model, because more screens are in the room and attention is only going one way.
But to be honest, that's always been the case. So I remember someone famously said that the biggest kind of barrier for any advertiser was always the cup of tea, because anyone can go and make a cup of tea during an ad break whenever they like. So I think there's always been the challenge around the scarcity of attention, which is basically kind of what you're saying. And I also, but to be on that, I think we've talked about this before as well, around the evolution of how we, in kind of today's culture, consume and actually interpret information. And there's been proven theory to show that it's actually on a more highly involved and highly processed level. So we can actually multitask and we can multi-process much more than we could 10 or 50 years ago. So I don't know if it actually, attention obviously then becomes quite an interesting concept, because what does attention mean? Do you have to be actively engaged in something to process it? Because I think, I mean, as we all know, advertising doesn't work on that level predominantly anyway. So a lot of low intention processing is where we kind of make most of the gains.
But it might certainly inform some of the strategies you develop. So you might start to very deliberately develop content for, say, broadcast, which is designed to be low-involved processed, versus, say, tablet mobile content, which is designed to be high involvement, and they're working together. Mm-hmm. And what you need to develop are multi-screen content strategies rather than just making a TV ad.
Exactly, I completely agree. So it's all about, for the challenge for advertisers in that context, is thinking about what, not just one piece of AV, but how, what's the AV strategy in the right context?
And what's the content platform for communication?
And it's, as I say, because this article is from the UK, it's not the UK only. Like, a third of Australian homes basically have four screens in them. They're saying it's a TV, your PC, your tablet, and your mobile phone. So that's up from like 16% a year ago. So the number of screens in Australian homes is growing quite quickly. It's basically almost on par with, you know, what the UK percentage is. So it's not another country issue. It's definitely a local issue as well, even though it's this report from the UK.
I think there's something interesting in the dual audience opportunity as well. And I'd love to see an advertiser embrace this this trend of having almost like this faux family time together, I suppose, because you're in the same room, but you're not all mentally in the same room.
This is another trend that Nicola's coined, faux family time. Those who listened last time, what was it?
I'm host today, so I'm definitely allowed to make it as many words.
Or was it cultural foo-foo last time?
Not a foo-foo, hoo-ha.
Hoo-ha, sorry.
Last week was the hoo-ha edition.
And now some faux family time.
No faux family time.
But I have got a serious point in that I think...
The faux fam edition.
The faux fam, yeah. But if families are feeling like they're spending more time together because they are literally in the same room together, that, as we've talked about, as this report talks about, actually their time is fragmented because they're kind of doing different things. I would love to see an advertiser embrace that and think about what could be on the main screen versus then how could those family members kind of have some sort of like experience that's more specific and relevant for them on their second screen. I think that you can imagine some really cool, like really funny kind of plays on that.
Because yeah, I remember when I was watching the David Africa. I was watching Africa a few months ago, and what I would have loved would have been a tablet companion app, where some kind of Google Maps application where I could actually zoom in and interact on those places that were appearing on screen. There were loads of opportunities where multi screens could become a real virtue, and there's no reason why a whole host of brands could have sponsored that. And so rather than interrupting the content, brands could create experiences designed to go along with that are mutually beneficial to the content. And so you're not interrupting it, but you're augmenting the experience of the content. That's quite a good idea.
But also, for Nicola's point, how awesome would that be to understand the dynamics of the family in that circumstance? So to take that idea further, if there was a kid and a child in that family, like there'd be an app around Guess the Animal or that starts to interact specifically for them and develop on their interests and their,
which could be different to another adult that's in the room that might want to have a different type of augmentation of that same content. Yeah. I think there's a big opportunity. It'd be
massive. Well, you've heard it here first. Yeah. Ideas in action.
Let's make that happen.
Sure.
Wonderful. So moving on, second conversation. I really enjoyed that. That was good. Second conversation we're going to have today is based on an article written by Omnicom Media Group, OMG, on a media poll survey.
May we?
I was waiting for one of you to pipe in with Pod Bear. You're too slow, podcasters. And this article is all about cutting the cord and talking specifically about the US market, but talking about how cable TV is actually getting kind of a bit wiped out, really. Who wants to take us through this report?
Well, it's a research study by GfK, who are a research group, and they suggested in the US, millions of people are essentially moving to the internet and free over the air, what they call OTA reception. They say 6% of US households have churned out of cable and satellite TV in favour of online streaming only. They call this trend cutting the cord. And they say that it's no surprise that the TV consumption is slowly moving to an on-demand basis. They cite things like Netflix's $100 million drama House of Cards, the semi-original new season of Arrested Development. There are a host of other examples that we're now seeing where these things are for Emmys. Internet-only shows now are for Emmys, which I think even a few years ago, a lot of people on TV have said that just wouldn't happen. So it's not just
the kind. About I think on the first or maybe the second podcast you did, I remember talking about the threat of Netflix on as content. Mm.
And so that's what I think we're seeing consumer behaviour change, and we're seeing content move with it. And the question is, does that leave things like cable as interim technologies? Will there ultimately be a shift to, in the long term, broadcast delivery and pure on-demand delivery? And kind of subscriptions in the middle, but perhaps you will see a rebalance and there will be a spectrum.
Well, it says in the same report... that actually 1 in 5 young households has probably never even got a traditional TV subscription to begin with. So that, is a huge volume gap.
Not that I'm a young household, but I don't...
Yes, you are, Laura.
I don't
youngest
have a... I don't have pay TV or anything, and I very rarely ever turn on my actual TV, even though I have free-to-air access. So really all I do is stream my shows online, and I think there's not really too many events that I watch live, although I know there's still going to be those big events, the main events that people want to watch live.
First Night, Big Brother.
Exactly. And want to make sure that they're part of the social conversation that's happening there, and that the next day they're able to talk over the water cooler about what happened in those big events, or maybe, I don't even know what they're called. Grand finals. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Sports grand finals. Mm-hmm. So those things will always have a TV broadcast element to them. But kind of going back on, I wasn't in the conversation last week in terms of binge viewing, but I did listen to the podcast. So, listener as well.
Oh, that's who listened.
and kind of what we're talking about here in terms of cord cutting and using online services, and I Hulu has done this in the States where you can pay for access to get the shows straight away versus having to wait a week if you're on the free access. And it kind of started making me think about Spotify as well, and kind of how TV might go the way of music, where it's not necessarily you don't necessarily have to get it from this one location anymore. You can either get it free by listening to ads, or you can pay for it and not have it. I mean, it's weird. Mm. It's that now with Apple TV and stuff like that. Mm. But it's just interesting to kind of see how far it might go, because I think there was an article recently that there's so many more people that are streaming music now and paying for their music service. And so it's just wondering. Mm. I wonder if it'll be a dip in TV and then it might just kind of.
Yeah,
and
that was always a case of piracy, wasn't it? With music piracy, there were plenty of positive voices saying, if you build it, they will come. And it was built, and people came.
Yeah.
And now, the arguments about revenues aside, a lot of people are paying a regular subscription for music. Exactly the same thing could or should be argued for audiovisual content.
Yeah. Although I guess the difference, just from a kind of trend perspective, is around now. So, like TV content or AV content is predominantly there's something more urgent about it than it is like audio content. So, like, you've got to have seen the latest Game of Thrones. I know we always talk about it. Why not?
Yeah. I still haven't, by the way.
But you've got to see. If you haven't seen it, you're missing, as you said, a water cooler moment or a big cultural moment. And that cultural moment is a curve. So it'll always decrease from whenever that moment happened, when most people watched it. So that, for me, is why that model is slightly flawed, because it's not about on demand always. There'll always be the moments where you've got to connect with people. And goes back to what I said earlier around kind of human behaviours, and we inherently want to connect, want to belong, and actually AV and TV content is a way that we do that quite often in culture. So we won't ever adopt that kind of complete demand model, because I don't think that will happen on TV content.
I'm just thinking about, sorry, this might be a slight tangent because I was in my brain. But I was thinking, because last week in the digital newsletter, we sent around an article about Chromecast, which is a new product from Google, where it's basically a little dongle you can stick in the back of your TV and stream shows or stream things from the internet straight to your TV. And then I read something just recently this week that says Hulu's going to work really closely with them to make sure that their service is available through Chromecast. And so I wonder if it's not necessarily going to be, like, the content may still be a now. Like, I can access it through my streaming service, through Chromecast or whatever, Hulu on my computer, or whatever the case may be. So I still watch it now. Obviously, the content providers, whether they be the networks or the actual makers of the content, just have to allow it to be accessible at that now time.
Yeah.
So you just are now consuming it across multiple devices rather than locking people in to only now on the TV.
And I think that creates a whole new ecosystem for how brands might invest in all of this. So I do honestly see we are seeing a shift away from broadcast interruption. Once things go on demand, you are less easily going to be happy with things being broadcasted and interrupted in that. But how amazing would it be to have a premium sponsorship opportunity where you haven't got to pay to watch Game of Thrones Season 2. It's brought to you and sponsored by a relevant brand who might create some really interesting content to sit around that. And so I can think that it creates a whole new plethora and window for opportunities, because it might be that one brand might choose to sponsor Game of Thrones On Demand Season 2 for men. Another brand might sponsor it for women. So based on who's logged in and viewing, different brands could sponsor different shows. It creates a whole new window on that.
I think it's really interesting as well, given the first kind of conversation we had around like lean forward or high attention processing versus low attention processing, because that for me therefore implies that we're turning AV into more of a high attention processing. So you have to make more of a stand in order to kind of get your message across, because you're not interrupting. So, which is quite a significant shift to how advertisers currently use AV. So that for me is a really interesting shift in how I might have to think about AV strategy.
I think that's right. I think you might say it's not always relevant. So within PhD, we talk about different comms models. It might just be this becomes more of a solution for what we'd call an augment, where you're looking to build new associations versus perhaps some of the other comms models.
Yeah,
I think it does also suggest why so many brands are finding ways of doing content. I mean, we know we could, you know, have a pros list for why brands should get into developing their own content as long as they're on, but as the advertising model is changing and broadcast models are changing, then without having content that can seamlessly be put into these environments, then that broadcast disruption model doesn't work, the high and low involvement thing is a bit out of kilter, and all of a sudden, actually having some content coming from a brand, not necessarily branded content, i.e. a long ad, becomes of utmost importance.
But I do think, and I strongly believe that it's not that it doesn't work, it just has a place, and I think that's an important differentiation to have. So it will always have a place. Interruption model, low attention processing will always have a really clear role in advertising.
But you can argue a poster is low involvement process.
Yeah,
you can argue that it's not even just an AV thing. There'll always be those, there'll always be that mix. But I think what it absolutely does do is it forces you for day one, when you're working on a brief, when you're looking at the content or connection strategy, rather, for a brand, day one, you've got to think about those connection points and what content you've got to spread across that, rather than thinking, what is my interruptive ad?
Yeah.
And then what do I do beyond that to justify its existence?
Yeah, absolutely. And what it places more importance on thinking about, as you said earlier, the comms model or what you're trying to affect or the attitude behaviour change you actually really want to instigate through communications. So it kind of puts a lot of more pressure, but kind of more onus on kind of media planning and understanding that relationship a lot more. Just going back to the original article, I think it's really interesting for me around this idea. I mean, it's a really old thought, but actually that people don't watch, they don't watch platforms, they don't watch channels, they watch content. Mm-hmm. And for me, this is a complete and utter kind of extreme version of that. And why wouldn't you just follow the content you love on whatever platform it exists on?
That's easiest for you.
Exactly. So for me, it's just proving that point again. So people that are not watching channels, and they never have, they watch the programs that they want to watch, and increasing their watching it on when they want to watch it. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So from TV and content onto a conversation. If I'm honest, guys, I'm not really sure I'm getting this this campaign. It's from Intel and Toshiba. It's called The Power Inside, and we're referencing a YouTube trailer of a new movie. So it appears to be a new social film that's premiering on 15th of August, and we, us real people, can be in this movie. I'm a little bit confused.
Well, you're missing the biggest point, which is it's about alien moustaches.
Oh, yeah, okay. So it's about the Power Inside. The trailer does talk about alien moustaches. It really reminds me of Tommyknockers, which frightened the hell out of me, because that film was oh my God, scarred me for life. But yeah, so aliens with moustaches walking around like zombies talking about coconut water in a supermarket.
Discuss.
What is this campaign about? Because I'm brutally confused.
So, I mean, I'm the same. First of all, it's kind of like, this looks phenomenal, right? So it's from Intel and Toshiba. They've called it a social film. But it's just like, this isn't just kind of like, you know, a couple of kids they grabbed off the street. This is Harvey Keitel is in this. And the boyfriend guy from Modern Family is in it. it might be Craig Roberts, but it might not be. I don't know, but he's in it.
But does that excuse the fact that they've got this campaign that none of us know what the hell is going on?
I think that's a great thing. I mean, J.J. Abrams in his TED talk talked about how when he develops, whether it's a TV show like Lost or movies, he's a great believer in the mystery box. He's a great believer that as humans we're drawn to questions we want to answer. He says like great movies like the opening of Star Wars is a great start of a movie, because it's just got loads of mystery boxes. In the first 4 minutes, you've got, why is the big ship attacking the little ship? Why are those robots running around? Who's the princess? So that within minutes, you're sucked into this narrative. And I love that about this. I love that it's just out there and it exists, and we're drawn into working out what it is.
But the counter-argument to that, of course I'd have a counter-argument.
Would that be a rational and cynical counter-argument?
Of course it would be. Well, it would be, what on earth has Intel and Toshiba got to do with this really random narrative? I completely buy the construct of a narrative and how people are drawn into it, but how is that a good use of a client's money to promote or associate itself with that piece of content would be the challenge. So you could literally insert any brand into that conversation.
Intel and Toshiba, the power inside.
Do you know what I think of Toshiba? From Tosh from the Bill, and that's why there's a moustache. That's literally my logic for it. That's my engram.
Oh, for goodness sake. That is like the most convoluted engram association.
That is not, is it?
I'm a host, so I'm just going to dive into the conversation.
I did not connect.
It reminds me of that big McDonald's game. Do you remember that the augmented reality game that McDonald's launched around the Olympics? Actually, it was awesome. It was a big kind of online game around collecting these rings and all sorts of things. No one knew that it was from McDonald's. Awesome. And this feels like this could go down that route. So what? Going back to the comms roles, what are we actually trying to do? What is the brand trying to spend its media dollars trying to affect?
Well, if you go to the website, which is thepowerinside.com, and if you scroll down, there are product offers.
Well, awesome.
Is that but it's, you know, it's always powered by Intel. So for me, I got more out of this for Intel than I would have. I watched the trailer and I still got Intel. I didn't even see Toshiba. So,
what do you mean? What are you getting out of? What are you getting out of it? I don't understand.
No. The power inside. I mean, obviously, I saw this at Intel, but the power inside. It's always powered. Everything's always powered by Intel.
Intel inside.
Intel inside.
I get that. But yeah. What's that got to do with an alien moustache?
No. I at least have the association that the alien moustache.
I'm subconsciously stroking my moustache. I'm having a hairy winter. I'm very bearded at the moment. Oh, stop it! I'm very bearded at the moment. I was stroking my moustache as you were saying that.
But I just think I get that. But I think that's a very big strategic stretch. And consumers, I think we are like the biggest thing we learn when we talk to consumers is that they
want to do
bugger
all.
And so don't expect them to do stuff. And this is expecting a lot of consumers. So you're expecting me to A, understand and watch this narrative, B, make the strategic leap to understand what the brand's role in that is, and that is way too much for anything or anyone to do.
I think, Stu, you're going to have to audition now.
I want to audition now because I want to see what happens.
Yeah, well, Maybe we can follow it through and see what happens. The first podcast after the 15th of August, we will report back on whether we managed to get part of the Power Inside movie.
And I just want to say, you know, kudos, it looks amazing. And kudos to getting someone like Harvey Keitel. I mean, it's certainly up in the ante in terms of brand of content and quality of execution.
Or just throwing money at the corporate problem. Discuss.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps we'll discuss that when we see how well it works, too.
Let's.
Awesome. The last thing we're going to talk about today, and I think it's because Chris is trying to be ultra good today, but for people that aren't familiar and maybe not in Sydney, Magnum have had an activation happening at Westfield for about the last 3 weeks. And absolute hats off to the activation agency, because this Magnum pop-up stand has had regularly, and I'm talking like every day, not like I'm every day in Westfield, but quite often, but every day, about circa 40 people queuing up to pay their own money to go and buy a Magnum ice cream.
And more than that, pay their own money to market Magnum.
To market Magnum. So it is actually quite outstanding when you go and have a look in Pitt Street and you look at these wallies, and I call them wallies. I'm sorry if you're a podcast listener and you've done this, but what a wally. To stand up for probably over half an hour to buy a Magnum ice cream. What? Let's have a chat about that then. What have Magnum done right?
There's a question.
What has Magnum done right? And as I said, the activation agency has done an amazing job.
I love this. I think it started in Stockholm. I think Stockholm may have been the first one when it was first done. It's now reached Sydney. It's been there for 3 weeks. We've only just got around to doing it. And it's a ground floor of Westfield in the city, in the CBD in Sydney. And what it is it's a pop-up store where you select the kind of chocolate coating you want, whether you want dark chocolate or milk chocolate or white chocolate. You then select the toppings that go on your Magnum, and they are things like rose petals and
gold
and diamonds and lines and tigers and bears. And then you get it in a little tray and you get your own custom Magnum. But it's just a Magnum. But what's amazing, it's a Magnum that's amazingly well packaged. And I just think it's a phenomenal example of a brand that is doing marketing that just gets people to pay for its existence. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant activation.
It's bonkers. What I found bonkers.
And it also talks to the brand values of indulgence and specialness. And actually that whole queuing up for this thing is a real external signifier of that indulgence, and the fact that you will actually wait 15 minutes to have this experience is proof positive of just how indulgent people feel it is.
And I think the cues that we get from pop-up experiences, the whole behavioural economics of I've only got a short time amount to do this,
scarcity
value of it, yeah, it means that wallies, I'm going to be a total wally and go queue
you
up.
You love
and get
using the word wally today,
I know.
You're creating a real hoo-ha around the
But I will go and be a wally, because I do want to know what this rose petal Magnum tastes like.
Rose petals,
yeah.
And joy.
But also a Magnum, an ice cream activating in the Australian winter. Discuss. Interesting.
Well, I think it's actually working quite a lot on FMCG. There's actually a fine tipping point. So when it's actually too hot, people don't really want ice creams, or they don't want certain soft drinks, shall we say. So there is actually people's tastes and preferences have changed quite quickly. So actually, it kind of does make sense. That might be me post-rationalising their own activation, but there's probably method in their madness.
They probably also lucked out that we've had a mild.
It's all planned, so Lauren. Yeah. In communication.
They changed the weather. Mother Nature, please.
You say winter, but it's the equivalent of February 2nd in the Northern Hemisphere. It is currently 21 degrees outside.
Yeah. And shall I tell you what it did do? It may be bought by a Magnum today from the 7-Eleven.
That is the power of podcast, that is. She knew she was talking about it, so she bought one.
I went and bought a Magnum because we were talking about it. I saw it, talking about it, and it just made me really want a Magnum. So even though I might not have been a Wally and queued up...
You're actually the biggest Wally.
You're the biggest Wally of all because you didn't get
your indulgent experience. Yeah. You still eat the Magnum.
To be honest, I think that activation is awesome. It's very short term. Loads of brands have done it. I mean, Nike, customization is a massive trend that loads of brands have jumped on. It is short term because the novelty will wear off. But it's fine for brands to have gimmicks every now and then.
That would
be interesting. That would be turning a short-term gimmick into a long-term activation.
Yeah.
See, Lauren, you cracked it for them.
And on that note, we're going to wrap up this week's podcast. I thank you all very, very much for being so nice to me as your this week's host. And I'd just like to say a big thank you to Lauren Oldham.
Thank you.
And to Chris Stevenson.
Thank you very much. A quick shout out to Avril and Louise, who are now syndicating the PhD cast on the Global Fodder blog. So track that down and you now listen to us there. So big shout out to Avril and Louise. Thanks a lot.
And Fodder is spelled
P-H-O-D-D-E-R. Fodder with a P-H and a D in the middle.
And a farewell, au revoir, to the lovely
Stuart Gurney. Au revoir. Au revoir, mes amis. Merci beaucoup.
Je m'appelle Nicolas. Au revoir. To get more from PhD Australia, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or find us on Google Plus at PhD Australia.